Hey, how are you, Will?
I'm very mirthful on what is finally a beautiful Wednesday afternoon in New York City.
It is a beautiful day here in Kansas City, too. First one we've had in a long time. We'll introduce ourselves. I'm Hampton Stevens. I'm a freelance writer. I write a lot about sports for ESPN and what else? The Atlantic, and wrote a column for Playboy and stuff. And you are?
I'm Will Leach. I am a contributing editor at New York Magazine. I am the founder of Deadspin.com, and I'm a columnist for the Sporting News. I have written some books. I have a book coming out, which I will probably plug throughout our conversation, called Are We Winning?, which is about the connection of baseball and fatherhood, that comes out on May 4th, which is a month before my wedding, which is, and you can tell that I'm marrying someone very cool because there's all kinds of fancy art behind me that I know nothing about. There are probably people watching this going, oh my gosh, she has a a Puccini or something, yeah. And all these fancy things I don't know anything about, but apparently, it's fancy art. So anyways, that is me. Welcome. I think we're here to talk about the NCAA tournament, correct?
We're going to talk about the tournament. We're apparently going to blow everybody's image of Will Leach as, you know, kind of a badass.
Yes, that is the image. Also, I'm actually wearing glasses right now. These are the glasses that I put on simply when I'm looking at myself on a computer screen. So I have to wear.
Let's talk about sports.
Yeah, so, please.
The NCAA basketball tournament is almost over. And I think one of the things that makes it so unusual. Oh, are you there?
I'm here.
Jiminy Christmas. I think that was a voicemail. And you can edit this, guys. And one of the things, Will, I think makes the NCAA tournament so unusual is that it's the opening rounds are the best.
Yeah, it is strange that, like, it's funny because, you know, people love the Thursday to Sunday aspect of it so much, and to me, it's, you know, I wrote a piece for the New York Times website that I think is going up Wednesday or Thursday of this week about the idea that, like, the first two days of the tournament are, it's almost sensory overload. You know, any one of those games we would put aside, they're so important that we would put aside anything that we were doing that evening during the season to watch that game at that level of importance, and then there's four of them happening at the same time, and then there are four more happening at the same time, and it happens for 2 days. It's almost too much to deal with. So to me, by the time you get to this point, when you get to the Final Four, you know, I often find that a lot of the Final Four is almost for real college basketball fans, as opposed to Thursday and Friday, which are for people playing with their brackets. By this point, most people's brackets are over. There's usually the creme de la creme of which I believe is German of the tournament are at this point. But this year there's always this ongoing theory that the first 4 days are exciting because they get rid of the lower teams, and then by the end you have your Kentuckys, you have your Kansas, you have your higher-level teams, and this year that's not the case at all.
No, it's not. You can see me sipping from my Jayhawk mug right as you said that. I also should apologize for smoking. No, it's not the case, and I think it's like it's one of the things that makes the tournament so great, and yet it's kind of awful. I mean, I don't think I'm the first person. Like, do you really want Butler to win a national title? I don't. To me, it sounds kind of like a AAA team winning the World Series or something. And I don't see. Boy, this will sound terrible. Sorry, Indianapolis, but I don't see them being competitive at all.
You see,
I don't even know how they got this far.
This is power conference bias, by the way. You know, it's funny because if Butler, one of the things that's impressive about Butler is that they beat. You know, they beat the top seeds. Like Michigan State, generally, you know, people think, oh, Michigan State, they're always in the Final Four. They deserve to be there. They're the Big Ten. But, you know,
okay,
I mean,
isn't it hot three-point shooting? It's like, that's what it is. Like,
it's college basketball. That's exactly what college basketball is. Like, the notion that, like if you want plotting superior athleticism and play calling to make sure that when the best team always wins out, the NBA playoffs are coming up very soon. But to me, the joy of the NCAA tournament is the idea that anyone can win at any time. A team can get hot and take out someone. It kind of sounds like, and I don't mean any offense to you on this, it kind of sounds like you're just a little frustrated because of Kansas.
I'm more than a little frustrated because of Kansas. You know, I mean, the funny thing is that for everybody else, it's just kind of a funny thing that happens. Oh, Kansas lost. The tournament's so crazy. You know, and it's just like, well, I've been watching this team, you know, we, the Jayhawk faithful.
Right.
Can we remove nation? You can't add nation to everything. You know, like, you can't just be like, you know, like, oh, we're the Butler Nation. No, you're not. Yeah. You're a tiny school.
Yeah. Anyway, Marlins Nation.
It's the College Station Nation. No, but it's called, it's the Jayhawk faithful. You know, you pour over every dribble. Dissect every play, starting from, you know, exhibition season blowouts, and you go through it all the way, and it's painful, and I don't know, I'd be interested in your take on this, because, well, when you're a fan and your team wins, you run around and high-five people like you accomplished something, when you didn't, and so I think you really have to take blame when you lose.
Well, to me, that will make the ultimate successes that much more poignant. if your team loses and you don't make it, that makes it that much more exciting. It means more. Like, you know, whenever Kansas makes it to a Final Four again with their two-paid head coach and wins a national title. You will, like, the Northern Iowa loss will mean, like, that will be part of what gave you your medal as a fan to earn
kind of, but I mean, when you're really intensely involved, and it's hard to communicate this about Kansas, because we're sort of like the Yankees in this regard, like, you expect to make the Final Four.
Yeah, you're not
and
like
kind of, but the thing that I mean, specifically, like, there are losses that don't matter to me as much, and it's because of players. And Sharon Collins, for example, you know, like, that broke my heart. Jacques Vaughn broke my heart. I don't feel bad for Paul Pierce.
Right, he's okay.
Frankly, you know, Paul Pierce left early and actually, you know, it was a 50-game NBA lockout. He could have been playing for KU that year. But that's another story, and one I'm obviously not bitter about at all. But
Did you lose interest in the tournament when Kansas lost?
Did I what in the tournament?
Did any of your interests in the tournament wane when Kansas lost?
Oh, gosh, yes, absolutely. Not only, I couldn't watch basketball. I cannot watch basketball. I have to watch sitcoms, old movies. It's not going to happen. It makes it, especially watching Michigan State and Northern Iowa, because knew that they would miss, you know, that Northern Iowa was going to miss every shot that they made because they've had a week to think about it. And, like, oh, no, that weekend was so painful. I'll watch, it's like you say, I'll watch the tournament games because it's, you know, it's like AFC, NFC Championship Sunday. It's like you say, it's for the real fans, but. And we get a chance to see Gus Johnson, which I'm always a big fan of.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I've Gus Johnson is obviously, people love Gus Johnson. People love Gus Johnson. There's something about Gus Johnson that almost sounds the way that the tournament feels to us. Like, when it's so exciting, you just want to run around and frankly, he sounds as if he is mad. So in a lot of ways, he does serve as the voice of the tournament. I have to say, I went to the University of Illinois. My team did not even make the tournament this year. And to side with your point, once they were eliminated from the NIT, I did lose all interest in the NIT. But for one glorious week, the NIT was the centerpiece of my world. But the thing about Gus Johnson is that, like, you know, because I'm an Illinois fan, you know, I have the Big Ten Network here in New York. I was able to get that on my cable system out here. So Gus Johnson, you know, Gus Johnson works like crazy. You pick up a random night between November and March, and he is going to be broadcasting some game somewhere for someone. That's the thing, is that, like, it's very – now Gus Johnson makes sense. When you see him doing like when he was doing the Kansas State Xavier game, for example. Like, that was thrilling.
Probably the game of the tournament so far.
Yes, and Gus Johnson was perfect for that. There was a thrilling double overtime game. It was madness, crazy shots going back and forth. But most games aren't like that, but Gus Johnson calls them all as if they are. Gus Johnson is the same broadcaster, whether it is a double overtime Sweet 16 thriller between Xavier and Kansas State, or it is a meaningless late November Northwestern Chicago State game in front of an empty stadium in Evanston.
Yeah, but would you rather have that or Billy Packer, who's flat-out bored by most basketball games that he's watching?
Well, I'd say I will confess, I will take mock excitement, which really, let's not pretend. That's what it is. It is an act. It is theater. And that's fine. I will take that over mock outrage.
Yeah, either that, or it's either an act or it's some kind of bipolar disorder, possibly an Adderall addiction. We're not
right,
sure.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm sure. You kid. But I think there's something going on there. And that's great. Listen, I get it, and it fits in that, but overall, there is, and maybe I'm just, you know, I've gotten old on this stuff. But after a while, certainly, I want to believe it. You know, you think about a great broadcaster like Jack Buck, for example. Jack Buck very rarely got excited, but when he did, it was because it meant something. When Ozzie Smith hits the home run in the 1985 National Championship Series, he starts screaming, "Go crazy, go crazy!"
Of course, that's because baseball is so very rarely exciting. And if you could imagine, you know, Gus Johnson trying to call a baseball
game. I hate you so
game.
Much.
Actually, well, you know, golf, St. Louis, golf. Kansas City, St. Louis, yeah, that's right, Gus Johnson doing golf. And he's lining up for the putt! That's a key from the booth. Who's the best, Jay Billis?
I think Billis is good. I enjoyed, you know, one of my favorite as an Illinois fan was in 2005 when Illinois beat Arizona in the Elite Eight, which was another particularly exciting game that I was very happy to have. I believe that was Dick Enberg and Jay Billis and Bill Raftery were doing that game. And it's funny because Billis actually kind of – when Billis started out as an analyst – He kind of took the Raftery thing. He didn't say the onions part, but his cadences were very similar in a lot of ways. But like, Billis is smart. Like, Billis is a smart guy. There's a little bit of a smugness to him, which I think is just what happens when you're on TV a lot. But as you can tell by us now, we're not on television a lot, and therefore are nice, sprightly, mirthful people and not smug at all. But certainly, Billis is good. I have to say. Sometimes, I know it's not an either-or. I know it's not Gus Johnson or Billy Packer. Listen, when Billy Packer was doing, one of the great things about Billy Packer is you hated him. He was so, like, there was something so just removed, and, oh, this game is so stupid. I missed the days when I was a point guard at Wake Forest, and my shorts barely covered my testicles. And I think it's an exact quote, by the way. And so, like, I understand, like Packer was not fun, but he was fun to hate. You know, and Clark Kellogg will be doing the games this weekend. It's perfectly fine, perfectly serviceable, but there is not that extra level. There are times when
didn't you hear what the president said? The president of the United States said Clark Kellogg was the finest college basketball broadcaster in America.
Was he talking to Clark Kellogg?
He was at the time.
Well, you are the finest sports writer in America.
Thank you, sir. I agree about you. Yeah. In fact, do you want to talk about who we think is going to win or anything in the Final Four? Maybe Michigan State, probably. I just don't want to see Huggins. I just can't stand Huggins personally. He's repulsive and symbolizes everything. He's probably a great guy, loves his kids, doesn't kick his dog, but symbolizes everything that's bad about college basketball. And West Virginia fans had a super year.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly the level of evil on each sideline when Calipari was playing Huggins was pretty high. I think that there was sulfur in the air. But, you know, I think Butler's going to beat Michigan State. You know, I've been watching Michigan State all year, and they've kind of done this through spit and gristle, frankly.
What's his name? Broke his foot, right?
Yeah, Caleb Lucas is out. He's not playing. And so, like, you know, this is –
they have another big injury.
Yeah, it's very impressive that they made it this far. Like it really we think of Michigan State always being in the tournament, always making the Final Four, and it's kind of ridiculous that I think Paul Klee, beat reporter for the Champaign News Gazette, had a great stat the other day where he pointed out that if you have played for Michigan State in the last 12 years, you've been to a Final Four. Like that's if you had any time in the last 12 years, you've been to a Final Four, which is pretty crazy. But
okay,
this
so
is not
is that?
One of his
I mean,
best
that's
teams.
Coaching. That's it's just Izzo, some kind of G. What the heck is that?
Well, the reason they're here this year is they have not, like, the teams that they probably would have had a lot of trouble with kept getting knocked off right in front of them. They kept getting teams after big wins. I think you saw that with Northern Iowa. You saw that with Tennessee. This is not even one of the best Tennessee teams. And as an Illinois Bruce Pearl hater, I was very pleased that Bruce Pearl did not get the bump in publicity that he would have gotten if they had made the Final Four. But this is – like Michigan State has been very fortunate in a way that some might argue, say, Kansas was back in the Danny Manning days. Michigan State has caught a lot of breaks that way. And you could argue that Butler would also be a break that way. And even you can argue that – I mean, honestly, you're a Kansas guy. Do you really think right now if Kansas or Kentucky were in this Final Four that they wouldn't win it?
Well, no, I would hope. I mean, that's kind of what I was talking about at the beginning. It's sort of like, it's so fun to see these David and Goliath matchups in the early rounds, but there's no glamour. I mean, there's no glamour to this Final Four. It's kind of like, you know, a Royals and Tampa Bay Rays, you know, play. It's just like, yeah, that's neat that the underdog made it, but I would much rather watch Kansas-Kentucky.
Yeah, I don't think
I think most America would.
I think most America would claim they won't, but I bet the ratings are lower this weekend. I bet you generally – I don't always think ratings are the best way to gauge these things. But certainly I would bet – I bet certainly CBS would have loved – having Duke helps. Having Duke there helps.
Hey, you know, I wanted to ask you about Duke. I think Whitlock, who manages to bring race into everything, when it was Duke is seated too high because they're not tatted up or something. Like, what – you know, what's – why do people hate Duke? Well –
Well, first off, John Shire just – he has tattoos. They're just very, very light ones. People hate Duke. You know, it's funny. I wrote about this for the Times a couple of years ago about the general idea that, like, there's something about Duke. First of all, I think that what Whitlock's probably coming from is the idea that people somehow like Duke, and I don't think that's the case at all. And it's funny that, like, I know people that dislike Duke that don't care about college basketball at all, and I think that is part of the idea. I think
why, you know, is it because they're a Southern school that thinks they're Ivy League, because it's snobby, because it's what I mean it's, there does seem to be some element of whiteness there or something, but I can't quite, why are they get whiny players? Is it that easy? You know, Bobby Burley,
I mean, that doesn't hurt. Yeah, there is always one guy on every Duke team that you just want to put through a wall. Like, I don't think there's any question about that. But and they're very unique. You very rarely see guys like that on other teams. Duke has cornered the market on white guys you want to put through a wall. But you know, Chris Collins, he's probably the one that still to this day bothers me the most. But you know, I think it's a matter too. It's funny, because I sense a little less Duke hate this year than usual. It's just because it's been, what, five? It's been 5 years since they've been to the Final Four. I think there was a ubiquitous about them. And but it's funny to think that, like, you know, I think Krzyzewski is a pretty large part of it, too. You know, and it's funny because I think Krzyzewski has become more likable since he took that season off. About 5 or 6 years ago, there seems to be a little bit more relaxed to him. But, like, this is the guy that did an Amex commercial that says, I'm just a leader that happens to coach basketball.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, like, that is not going to make you popular with anyone. So I think there's an element of Coach K to it, too. But, you know, it is strange that this year, the two – I know that you're not rooting for Butler, but I bet most people are going to be rooting for Butler. And, you know, they do – it is the unknown. Their coach is younger than I am, which is – you know, I know I'm not 21 years old, but it's – you know, I mean, their coach, if he were a running back in the NFL, would still be playing. I mean, it's kind of –
it's odd. I mean, it's odd because Americans root for love the underdog story, you know, and yet we've never really – we haven't really been an underdog in quite some time. You know, we're pretty much the overdog, but we like to see ourselves as this little
– Yeah, sure, I love when they do that in the Olympics. They're like, oh, yeah, the Americans have overcome so much to get to this point.
Those NHL players somehow those plucky kids managed to beat the other NHL players.
Yeah, the plucky kids.
So our predictions are that you say Butler is going to win, and I say
I think Butler is going to lose to Duke in the national championship game. That is my
answer. I mean, you've got to go with coaching and figure that outside shooting evens off, and then take size. You know, I mean, if you've got a big post player down low like the power conferences do, but maybe you're right. And then Monday, of course, the game, the magical transition. One of the most magical transitions of the sports season, as the college basketball season ends, spring and winter magically melting away into spring for the opening.
You sound like Bart Giamatti. That was awesome.
Thank you very much.
But before we get to baseball, I want to talk about one more thing about the tournament, if that's okay.
I'll go. I'm impressed. I don't even know if I can watch.
No, I got one more question. One more thing to talk about because I want to talk about baseball because that is my sport and my book, Are We Winning, coming out May 4th. I want to talk about this one great thing about the tournament this year. This may be the last time the tournament is like this. It's been the question all year, are they going to expand the tournament? Are they going to expand the tournament? Are they going to go to the 96 teams? The you know, coaches tend to be for expansion under the idea that, like, it will be easier to save your job, which, you know, Doug Gottlieb from ESPN actually made a really good point saying that, actually, I don't know, you don't see that many firings in college basketball. It's not like being a hockey coach or anything. And certainly, if you fail to make the 96 team tournament, you're getting fired. Like, you can make an argument that going to 96 teams would make more coaches be fired. But anyway, coaches want it to happen, and no one else wants it to happen.
No one else, right. And no one else has it. Well, TV executives.
Yeah, TV executives. Yeah, and the NCAA, because they think they can make more money out of it. I have to say, I think it's happening. I think that resistance is futile. I think if it's not happening this year, it will happen eventually.
Well, I think you're right, but that doesn't mean I have to like it.
See, I've come around on it.
How can it possibly not dilute the regular season and
But you and I care about the regular season because we watch basketball all the time. Most people don't. Most people start keeping an eye on college basketball around – they start looking at college basketball for the first time after the Super Bowl because it's a little bit of a dull time. They keep an eye out. They see the conference tournaments coming up. Most people this year – people that I consider sports fans didn't know that North Carolina was having a bad year. Most people don't pay attention to this until –
Oh, and it was deeply satisfying, by the way.
I'm sure.
Just a little bit of a grudge against Roy Williams. Just a little bit left. Just a little bit. And, yeah, that was a lot of fun. But, I mean, well, I think you're kind of making the case, which is, well, why don't we dilute the regular season even more? I mean, you're going to get – I mean, the NBA is the example of that where, like, people don't even tune in. I mean, I'm a fan, and I'm, like, just getting ready to kind of really pay attention. You know, I know the Lakers are good, and Dwight Howard's making commercials. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I watch the highlight packages, but, I mean, why would you want to do that, especially given that they're going to have the top 32 seeds – sit in the first weekend. I don't get it.
But I'm arguing people already do that. I'm saying it will be frustrating for you and I because we watch the we know who Joe Lunardi is and we get into bracketology and we know who Jerry Palm is. We know all these guys that do it and Ken Pomeroy and we pay attention to those guys. But most people don't. Most people start paying attention around then, if then, or they look at a bracket, which, by the way, you can actually put together a 96-team bracket on a sheet that can be filled out in an office. It's an initial fear. A lot of people say that. It actually works out very well. You add some little branches to each side. It's very easy.
So, okay, anyway, that's my biggest concern. Is that
I think it's most people's biggest concern. My fiance did a bracket this year, and she's beating me, by the way. And, it becomes easy. That's the tournament is the central thing. And the reason, and this is why I've come around to the 96 thing, and I've come around to not so much in liking it because I think the tournament is kind of perfect as is, but things can be more perfect. And to me, the reason I've come around to thinking that the backlash to them going to 96 teams will be less than I think what everyone thinks it's going to be, this is not like the BCS. People hate the BCS because the BCS deprives fans of something that they want. They want a clear some sort of playoff, some sort of tournament, some sort of definitive, we find out who the champion is. So we don't like the BCS because we imagine this thing that we could have that they will not allow us to have. All this does, literally, is the games we played on Tuesday and Wednesday, it adds more of Thursday and Friday. It adds more games. It adds more things to watch.
No, it doesn't. It changes the dynamic of the post. Now you don't even have – every major conference team is going to get in unless they're awful. I mean, you want mid-majors are going to get in. The conference tournaments won't matter. Those little conference tournaments that are so exciting in tournament week, it won't matter because both of the finalists of the Horizon League or whatever it is, sorry, but, they're both getting in anyway, so it just becomes another game. And, I mean, at that point, like, well, why – I mean, I hate to kind of give the obvious argument, but, like, well, why not make it – just make the whole season a tournament. Snake all season, but how about all 300 or what, 300 division teams or whatever? It's like, what are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to create this big dance or this big thing? Are you trying to determine a national champion, you know? I mean,
no, I agree. I definitely agree. I would love for it to say 64, but it's not staying or 65. It's not staying 65. It's going to 96, and we have to accept it. And what I'm arguing is that the backlash and the people being angry about it will not be nearly as loud as we imagine it is, because you're giving people more games. You can now watch your Thursday to Sunday exciting opening weekend is now Tuesday to Sunday. Like, people will respond to that because there is more. And I think
I agree, but we still have to agree disagree, because you're also taking away, for me anyway, you're taking away what makes those two or three weeks, those weeks between the Super Bowl and when college basketball gets really good. But I mean, I don't expect anybody's watching the exhibition game, you know, the preseason stuff. I don't know what needs to be fixed if it isn't broken. But I mean, I'm not really a purist. I mean, like, but I really, like, I don't. Like, I don't care. Like, I would love to see the NHL and the NBA just, you know, adopt a playoff structure that made it more difficult to get in, so there would be some interest in a regular season, you know, cross-conference matchup. And I just worry that that's what would happen. But, you know, speaking to your point, and I don't want to monologue, but speaking to your point, KU, K-State, or KU, Missouri, like, it's going to have interest for me, no matter what, you know, so.
We are not going to stop watching. You're just going to have more people watching more. That's why they're doing it. They're not, like, this idea that somehow they're going to kill the Golden Goose, I just don't see that. I don't. I think that will really frustrate college basketball writers who really have gotten very comfortable with it. It will frustrate me because I pay really close attention to this stuff, and it will be an adjustment period, and then I'll turn on my television at noon on Tuesday, and I will have 48 hours more of awesomeness than I have had every other year.
Will it mean
in a theoretical sense that these games count a little less, and the game that I watched in mid-December is not as important as it was? Like, believe you me, Illinois lost two games in this stupid HoopsTV.com tournament in Las Vegas this year, where the games were not even shown on television. You had to pay for a website to watch it. It was terrible. They lost the two games, and those are the two games that cost them the tournament. That's why they weren't in, because they lost those two stupid games that nobody saw but me. And so those games are not as important now. But who cares? Who cares what I think? Well, all that matters is what people are going to be watching on Tuesday and Wednesday.
Okay, so you're right. The seeding doesn't matter. Well, first of all, what you're going to do is you're going to cost America more money, young man. This is a tremendously expensive week in terms of productivity. And
that is the most fake stat. Slate did a great thing about that a few years ago. What those stats always assume, because I'm assuming you're referring to the stat of workplace productivity goes down from so-and-so.
Right.
I love the idea that the assumption that everyone in their office is just a drone that constantly just works all the time.
They'd be working anyway, right, but they wouldn't be doing something else anyway. And it's also the idea that, you know, that does actually help your company when people bond over things like sports in a bracket. And, but I like it better to say that you're going to cost America millions and millions of dollars.
I'm taking down the economy from the inside.
Well, you're too late. All right, what else? I'm against expansion because I think they should get rid of the tournament altogether and ban all playoffs. No, I do think that it's really a question of what you want to judge, and that gets back to that college football argument, which is, well, is this the best football team right now, at this moment, in January, or is this the best football team in September? It's kind of the same thing. Like, well, are you recording? You know, are you going to reward someone for, you know, okay, you lost to Tennessee, but, you know, like, well, you're right. That is inconsequential, but...
Yeah. You know, the standings are not like rotisserie standings where it's like, wow, their points per possession on offense is high. They move up the list because they played that game. These games are played to be won. To me, I agree. I'd love to keep it 64. I just don't. It's just my Stockholm syndrome and I'm justifying it to myself. But I think ultimately I'll be able to handle it. More basketball. More avoiding life.
It's not more avoiding life for me, mister. It's work.
That's true.
Especially, you know, when you have to deal with, you know, a loss that's emotional and spend a solid 2 months kind of in hibernation. The best thing to do is talk to talk to friends who don't care, kind of like your hippie or your band rat friends who are completely unaware that
the those disaster freaks, even, those weirdos that don't watch sports all the time. Ah, they're so weird.
Yeah, it's like, you know, and it's like, wait, there's not a black cloud hanging over your life? Hold on. You're not, you know, it's like, but do you think Cole Aldrich is going to stay? Or no, they're all gone. Okay, baseball. We got to finish up. We got like five more minutes. Let's talk about baseball.
I'll just read from the book.
It's you ruined. Baseball is ruined. Baseball is destroyed and awful. Here's why baseball is terrible.
Right.
Who's the pitcher for the White Sox that threw a no-hitter against the Warriors? Is that Burley?
Burley, yes. Yeah. St. Louis native.
If every pitcher in baseball was like him, the sport would come back and be fabulous in every way. It is the single biggest problem in baseball. I don't care what you say about your non-competitive small market teams. Hi, I'm calling from Kansas City. But, you know, why are we a small market and St. Louis isn't? You know, all that kind of stuff. Antitrust, I don't care. That's the single biggest problem for me. It's in the rule books. Stepping out of the batter's box, walking around the mound, playing with resin bags. I know this is supposed to be the Bart Giamatti, like, you know, poetic aspect. Ooh, it's the mental battle. No, it's dumb. It's dumb and it's slow and it's boring for fans to watch.
I guess it never occurred to me that baseball—that the downfall of baseball was the rosin bag.
That is correct.
But I suppose that's a possibility. Yeah, you know, if you are the type of personality like a Gus Johnson, who is unable to relax and soak in the mental aspect of things happening around you, that you might think that there are people like that. I would not want to be stuck with them in a room for a very long period of time, though I suppose they'd clean it a lot because they were active. But certainly, to me, one of the great underreported things of baseball, you know, because baseball is about to pass the NFL in total revenue. Baseball is at a labor peace when the NFL and the NBA are about to have nuclear winter. In each of those sports, baseball is healthier and thriving right now. There are more people watching baseball at this moment than any other time in human history.
Healthier would probably be a questionable point. The drug issues, but we'll just let that slide. It's great. They have a lot of games and a lot of people go. And I mean, I was furious when, in a burst of anti-Americanism, the Olympic Committee took the sport of baseball. I mean, the idea, and this is a sport which is played not only in the United States and Canada, but Latin America and much of the Pacific Rim. You know, and it's a terrific game, and I'm a supporter of it, but now, because I'm arguing with you, I'm going to say, no! Baseball, man! Yeah, okay, it's healthy, but fix it.
I mean, obviously, there are always things in every sport that do need to be worked on. I think.
I'll tell you what. I'm sorry to cut you off, but let me tell you, the argument that you're making to me sounds like the argument that people make for jazz. I don't know if you remember, like, the kids in the hall, but there was this one sketch where, like, the teacher was going, oh, I will wait for the death of rock and roll because the ultimate triumph of jazz, or it's like classical music snobs. You know what? Sure, I'm not sophisticated enough to appreciate Mozart. That's the problem. I also like the Rolling Stones and U2 and the Killers and Jet, and I just feel...
I don't like any of those things anymore.
You know, like, you like none of those things. But I do feel as if there is... I am frustrated by baseball because it revels in its past and in a way that tends to make it appeal to nerds like you and me instead of great athletes. You know, remember that Kenny Lofton commercial a couple years ago? It was like, baseball doesn't have the best athletes. Yes, they do. No, they don't. Yes, they do. You remember that a little bit? It was like, you know. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, you can make that argument, but, you know, also, Allen Iverson would have been an incredible soccer player, but he didn't. He played basketball. I mean, certainly, I don't think it's necessarily true, by the way, that baseball revels in its past. I think old people revel in their childhood. when you look, I write about this in the book, but, you know, supposedly, you know, when the day that Roger Maris hit his 61st home run, supposedly, you know, Billy Crystal, it seemed to have affected him somehow. And this is supposedly this great moment in baseball history that, and in human history, in American history, this incredible thing that everyone was watching and everything, everyone was tracking, and it really was some almost a referendum on, were you Roger Maris, were you Mickey Mantle, were you for Babe Ruth, what did this all mean? And that Yankee Stadium was one quarter full that day.
Right.
to me, like the idea, like, yeah, I'm sorry it's that like the game, I'm sorry the game was a little different, Mr. Costas or Mr. Chass. That than it was when you were a kid, but it is, and nobody, like, I feel like so much, even though a lot of the steroid debate is really a lot of kind of like middle-aged sports writers trying to recapture this supposedly perfect game of their youth that was never perfect, that was never ideal, and never really pastoral in the idea. Baseball is awesome.
Those guys were on speed, or, you know, in the 60s or whatever it is on. No, I mean, and I agree with that. I guess, and one of the biggest things that makes me angry about when people say that baseball, the problem is it's too expensive. Because you see these Latin players, well, it's not too expensive in the Dominican Republic. I mean, like, they don't need...
Yeah.
You know, they don't need these cleats and gloves, you know, $150 gloves, or what are gloves now? $300 probably. I don't know, they're like $150 when I was a kid. But you have to, I mean, the bigger problem is that you can't get 22 people to do anything. You ever tried to get 20, you ever tried to organize a softball game? You know, as opposed to shooting hoops, it's really difficult.
Of course.
And doesn't that reflect some kind of larger fracturing something in, you know, in American life?
Well, you know, Chuck Klosterman once wrote a great essay about why soccer was popular in the suburbs. And as he pointed out, well, soccer is popular in the suburbs because this is a sport that your kid can literally run around for an hour and a half and no one will have any idea whether he did well or whether he did not do well. And whereas baseball, you know, we're so concerned about, you know, the psyches of our kids and, it's a one-on-one sport. Your kid either succeeded or he failed or she failed. And so I think that's affected baseball in its own kind of sense too, but certainly, I don't find baseball any less fun to watch at all. that you're seeing a lot of young Americans play other sports. I don't think that's fine. Baseball is awesome. Believe you me, I wouldn't trade all the great players that have come to Dominican from Latin America for anything in the world. They've made baseball a better game, and it's just a shame that some people still refuse to notice.
Oh yeah, no, I agree, and I think it does speak to the fact that it can be an egalitarian game. But I mean, to me, it gets like I played in a, you know, you're playing a softball league, like you cannot get busy people to do stuff. And you, I wonder, well, so now is this a sport? Is this just going into raw spectators? But I mean, but I guess the original point I was trying to make is like when you watch the college game, except for the ping. I mean, it is so stunning to me. How fluid and beautiful the game is. Just the little things that maybe I was complaining about 5 minutes ago that people don't perceive. You know, the hitter comes up and they know the pitcher's going to throw to the outside part of the plate, so you got to reposition the outfielders just a little bit. You know, it seems to me that when the game flows faster... Like, why can't you just do a soccer thing where you put the commercials in the corner? You know, you just have a side-by-side and let them play. And because those, the bathroom breaks and the, you know, the hot dog breaks between innings, to me, just absolutely kill the game. I mean, I sound old.
Yeah, well, you know, I like the natural rhythms of it. And I think most good-hearted Americans and forthright, solid human beings agree with me. But, you know, some people aren't like that, Mr. Stevens, and some people feel otherwise. And I'm sorry that the conversation has degraded to this point, but you don't rip on baseball to me.
Well, if I was going to be honest with you, I think if the Kansas City Royals were a...
Hey, Keel! You have Rick A. Keel! You have Rick A. Keel this year!
You know, God bless him. I know you're Rick and Keel obsessed. But the big news in Kansas City is that we're getting an All-Star game and our stadium is gorgeous. So you know it's bad when it's just, you know, it's the facility that they're advertising and also other players. Like, Derek Jeter and the Yankees are coming in, you know, kind of like. And then you get all the Yankees fans that show up at the ballpark that have never even been to Manhattan, but they have the hat.
Yes.
All right. So are we done? What do you think?
I am comfortable with this. I think that you have been thoroughly defeated.
I think that's clearly the case.
But no, this was fun. I hope I'm assuming that this will be the last sports discussion on Bloggy Head. So you know, you guys can go back to your nerd talk of Middle East peace and the economy and healthcare and all that stuff that doesn't really matter.
Yes, I think all those unimportant things, and you know, I tried to smarten up the conversation. I think I said the words cultural implications at one point. I did the best I could, but
let me try. Ennui. There we go.
You did drop the times a lot. Okay, now we're just rambling. No, I hope that this works well, and I hope maybe we'll do something in the future where we have like a super structured debate, and we can really do a pro and con, because I couldn't really argue. What am I supposed to argue against the national pastime? I'm supposed to argue against more basketball?
You're a good American.
I can't argue against Butler. I take it all back. Go, little guys.
I beat you on Gus Johnson. All right, this was fun. Thanks for, well, if they'll let us, we'll do this again sometime.
It was a pleasure, Will. Thanks so much. Talk soon.
Of course, sir.
Goodbye.